Those of you who have heard me before know I do tend to like a little props. So I'm going to start out getting us kind of organized. So if I could have 7 volunteers come on up front. We're just doing a reverse offering. It's nothing asked of you. But I need 7 folks to come up front and help me get some stuff out into the rest of the group. Somebody wants to, everybody takes one of these and one of those.
Okay.
That makes sense? Right. And then another one of these and one of those in the center section. And one of these and one of those in the other section. Great, thank you. Awesome, this gives me a chance to get together here. Patricia's already figured out that this string goes through the little hole, and it might take you the whole talk to do it, and that's okay. I figured I'd give you something to do. And then when it's done, you can tie it on your name tag, or you can just tie it, or you can put it somewhere. I'd love to see those throughout the week, so find it. Name tag might be good, but you're free in Christ, whatever. Can you hear me okay? I'm a little taller than this. Is it okay? If it's okay with you in the recording, it's okay with me. I'm always a little taller than people think. Whatever. It's for you. That's the next talk. Having fun yet? If we run out, let me know, because I do have a few more. How we doing? Having fun yet? Got the little string through the little hole yet? Who needs more? So far? I have a few more that are already made, if that's helpful to people. Are you serious? There's one bell and one string left? Oh my gosh.
I've got a few.
You got a few? I got some that are already made if you want.
Well, it's pretty color. Well, I'm just gonna leave.
Okay. Good.
They're beautiful.
Got some extras? Nice. I tried to make these all ahead of time for you, and this is kind of what happens. It makes a great sound, but it's not terribly practical. All right, so just to get it all out of your system, okay, now, has everybody got its string? Everybody got string, more or less? Okay, so we're going to give them all a good ring, all right, on three. 1, 2, 3. Good. Thank you. I realize that in giving these to you, I have now opened myself up. I have now lost control. Because you now can do that whenever you feel like it. It's good. I'm okay with that. I am very much okay with that. Thank you for helping there. If you didn't get one and you're too shy to ask, I got more later. I want to thank my prayer group today. Thank Kirsten. Where's Kirsten? There you are. Thank you. Thank you for our contemplative prayer group today. It was so lovely, and I feel so grounded, which is so nice. I'm hot, but I'm grounded. You make good use of that. You could be my little fan or bee. My name is Pam Morse. I live in Carabasset Valley, Maine. You'll hear more than you want to about that. But my name is Pam. It's nice to be with you all. I had thanked Tanya for going first because it really enabled me to kind of just enter into camp and get to know a bunch of people and to just really relax without coming in and saying, oh, who are these people? I don't know these people. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? All that stuff. So she talked about busyness and FOMO and gave me a great gift. So that was really nice. Thank you. If you find that in the back you cannot hear me, you just let me know. All right? You good? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Try not to do that. Also, how many of you old-time folks who have been around a while, does anybody here remember Jeff and Ann Waite? I know that Jay, well, I know that Ray. There's a couple of folks. Jeff and Ann Waite were kind of the patriarchs of my home camp. And I remember as a young person, for the evening talks, they would always dress up. They always looked really good. And some are casual, but they looked good. And I always remember that. So I was in a quandary this afternoon whether I would change my clothes or not. And I was talking to Becky, like, I don't need clothes. And I just couldn't decide. I went up to brush my teeth, and I got toothpaste all over my shirt. So, hence the change of clothes. So I took it. And anyone at 5 of 9, feel free to wave your hands. I have my phone here, but it always fades, and I may forget to refresh it, and then I wouldn't know what time it was. And there's no clocks here, so I don't want to go beyond 9. So anybody at 5 of 9, you just jump up and down or say, wrap her up or whatever. Yeah, there you go. Ring the bells. Perfect. Ring the bells. Get a bell ringing thing going. I invite you to join me. I will do this myself tonight, but after this, I'm kind of invite you to join me in this, but I'm going to quiet myself here. God, be in my head and in my understanding. God, be in my eyes and in my looking. God, be in my mouth and in my speaking. God, be in my heart and in my serving. God, be at my end and at my departing. Amen. This is an amazing delight. I have been trying to get to Winnie CFO for goodness knows how long. And then when the counseling asked me to come, that was over 2 years ago. So it's been a long time. And I am just tickled pink to... to be here. I have heard a lot about this camp. And I have been able to be a part of CFO for well over 30 years. And so it's really wonderful to be at Winnie. There are some touch points of connection. Thought you might like to know a little bit about me. If we were in Maine, somebody would ask me where you're from, and my response would really have to be, I'm from away. Those of you in Maine know that. So I'm from away, but thank you for being gentle with me. Just a little short bio. I was raised in the Episcopal Church in Braintree, Massachusetts. My very first experience of grace that I recall, obviously there were others, that I recall was Mrs. Graves, who taught my Sunday school class when I was there, and I will always remember her and her teaching me grace. I got off on a good foot. I committed my life in a formal way to Jesus at a Baptist youth fellowship down the street at the Baptist church when I was a sophomore year in high school. And then, like so many others, a summer or two later, I arrived at my first CFO camp around about the summer of 81, 82, with a broken family. My parents were just in the midst of getting divorced, and my mom arrived with three girls to Warwick CFO. I was a recent high school graduate on my way to Bates College in Lewiston, Maine. My sister Leanne, does anybody here know my sister Leanne? Enough said. Look at who knows her. All right. A budding adolescent. And my little sister, my little baby sister Debbie, was 8 or 9 years old. We had never really gone anywhere, gotten out very much. I remember driving from Massachusetts to Connecticut. I think it was in Connecticut. My mother was for sure, we had a flat tire because the road on the highway kept going ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. It was the first time we'd been on cement roads. I mean, we really didn't get out all that much. Our experiences and our needs were really different. My sister Leanne, who was the middle sister, any middle sisters here? You understand, Rosemary. Leanne, gotta love her. She was ministered to by an angel. She ended up at a midwinter CFO retreat in Rye, New York, and was touched by a number of just angels. Anne Dorman was one. She was kind of the youth group leader of that event. And so it was from that midwinter retreat that my sister came back and said, we need to go to this place. We need to experience this thing. And so we went to Warwick CFO. For the first time, we went on scholarship, and that's my other opportunity. How many of you attended your first CFO camp with some kind of scholarship? All right. Raise them high. Be proud. Be proud. It's all right. All right. The amazing, beautiful thing about CFO camps is that desire to want people to experience it and willing to help people financially. The number of people I've known who have become real leaders in CFO came because folks seeded that, you know, made that seed, that mustard seed. Whoever was talking about that. And the people I met there back in the early 80s were out of this world. I mean, figuratively and literally. They were something. They were something else. I'm going to throw out some names because some people know. You never know who people know who in the little CFO world. Lucy and Bob Price were my youth group leaders and gave a precious gift of welcome. I mentioned Ann and Steve Waite, elegant yet full of faith. Dr. Gundy and his wife, gentle, loving one another. Joe and Evie Day, Jerry and Althea Dorman, saints of CFO in our little corner of Warwick, and saints in the faith and people who showed me the way. I saw lived out love relationships that I had never, ever seen. And I imagine it's the same for some of these junior, senior high kids. You're showing them something just by your living that they may not have ever seen. Several years later, at the ripe old age of 21, I did something that some of you also may have done before, which is I arrived at CFO camp with my new husband of 2 weeks. Now, has anybody else done a newlywed version of bringing your new spouse to? Oh, so you did, really? He brought you. Oh, marvelous. Yeah. Trial by fire, as they say. Yeah. The ones that didn't make it are not here, so we don't know. I tell you, it's not a kind thing to do to somebody, but you might as well just get it over with. It's like jumping into the deep end of a cold lake. Just do it. You know, just it's going to be better if you just go all in. And I remember arriving at the newlywed suite. I don't know if you have a newlywed suite here, but the newlywed suite at that time, there's a story there. Is there a story there? Want to hear it? At Warwick CFO was two twin beds. And I'll never forget Jerry Dorman walking in with string for us to tie the beds together. I know, that was racy in 1985. Woohoo! CFO, which is my Camp Warwick, then moved to, I'm skipping a lot of years, to Singing Hills. CFO with Singing Hills is and now in Plainfield, New Hampshire, which is near Lebanon, New Hampshire. A lot of reasons that we did that. But it's become an integral part of not only my married life, but the life of raising my children. So I'm a visual person, so I just thought you might like to see just a couple of, I'm not going to inundate you with family photos, but I thought you might like to see a couple. So if you want to show the first one, that's Earl and I. Anybody else know Earl? He may get here at the end of the week. Feel free to tease him or whatever. I love him. He has been so wonderful entering into CFO camp life, and it probably took him 4 or 5 years to really get on board. So be patient with your spouse or your fiancé or whatever. It takes a little bit of time. And I have two children. One is Ben. You can show the picture of Ben. It's one of my favorite pictures of Ben. You'll see some others later. Ben is now 23, so it's always good to bring out that photo. Isn't that good? Because, like, that's just a great photo. I mean, that just tells you a lot about Ben. He's a telephone. He's making a phone call, and that's just, you know, you never see them anymore. And it's even got a rotary dial. I'm going to talk about that later. And that's on his first birthday. And then I'll show you the other one, Sam. You can show Sam. This is Sam. Now, some of you might have met Sam. Eh? He's the scare. Yeah, you'll hear more about it. Sam was just at Big Bear with Becky and Carol and is now he's 19 years old, and he is a speaker. He just finished his third camp, so he's working on his rostering papers this summer. So you may hear from him again. And what's wonderful about Sam is I've never heard him speak. And he's never spoken at his home camp. He spoke at the Colorado Annual. I was talking with the Crawls about that. Spoke at the Colorado Annual, and from that, South Dakota invited him to speak, and then Tennessee invited him to speak, and then Big Bear this year. And it's been just amazing as a parent to watch CFO call gifts out of people. I don't know how this camp works and how you call out gifts among your younger people and give them opportunities and give them space, but that's how this thing survives, is allowing space for those people to be called out. And he is really, really, really latching on to this. And one of the things that's neat for him, and this is, I wasn't planning to say this, but hey, he's not here. Sam said to me, he's now 19, he gave his first talk when he was 15 years old, and did his first camp when he was 16. It's really kind of funny when the speaker has to have a guardian in order to go to camp. But he accepts camps whenever he can, and he gets offers. And he says, you know, Mom, I love speaking at CFO camp, but I feel a little selfish. He goes, because if I know I'm going to speak at camp, I have to pay attention to my life. Because I have to stand up and talk about my spiritual life and my spiritual journey and what's going on. And he's 19. Hello, he's a 19-year-old boy. How many 19-year-old boys are paying attention to their spiritual life? And it forces him to be accountable to his life and to his growth. And it is so cool as a parent to watch that. It's just amazing. He has a journal. He journals. He keeps notes. It's amazing. So I thank CFO for a lot of things, and that's one of them, because it keeps him grounded in the faith. And I could cry about that, but I won't. One of the things that is so great about CFO, and you don't have to keep looking at him. You can just give him the, yeah, there you go. Nice, peaceful. You don't want to look at Sam the whole time. I like to look at Sam the whole time. You don't have to like to do that. One of the things that makes CFO such an amazing experience is the responsibility that we all take to be aware of one another as we bring God's love and comfort and grace and challenge to one another. There's a covenant community that as soon as we enter a place like this, there's a level of trust that we can dare to offer ourselves for God's use to one another. This is an amazing opportunity don't squander it, because you don't get this every day of your life. And we dip in so fast that sometimes it can actually take us aback. And for new campers or newer campers, that can really kind of jar us. So be patient and gentle with each other as we live with one another and for one another, with our eyes wide open to the possibilities of what God is going to do. I don't know who wrote the back page of the schedule, but did anybody read the letter that's on the back page of the salmon-colored schedule? All right, I'm not going to tell you what it says because y'all didn't look at it, so there. But I love what it says there, and it was really important. How's that? I'm just going to leave that there. Participation is the key, by the way. It says it right here. Must be present to win. So be present. Another saint at Warwick CFO was a woman named Helen Henkel. And when she passed away, as often happens, her books all became available to the book table at our camp. And so I remember picking up a book that was hers that she had written in and made notes in. And there was a quote in that book from a gentleman named Henry Nouwen, who many of you have heard of. And this is a quote that I love to read as we begin CFO camps together. When I hear it, I say, this is CFO, or this is what CFO is for me and can be for other people. So here it goes. Christian hospitality is primarily the creation of a free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. Hospitality is not a subtle invitation to adopt the lifestyle of the host, but the gift of a chance for the guest to find his own. CFO can be that place of hospitality. It's a big deal, hospitality, a gift that's often undervalued. I don't really have it, just to let you know. I'm not the person baking cookies. I'm not the person serving all that stuff. I'm not even the person that opens my home and have people living there or staying there that I don't really know. So I really treasure hospitality. When I was in high school, I had a young woman stay with us for a time. She was an AFS exchange student from Peru. And I'm not a very good host. Because one day, I don't know, December, January, I don't know, she walked out the front door of the house and onto the steps and slid to the bottom and broke her arm because I had never told her that snow is slippery. I did not take very good care of my guest. I didn't pay attention to where she was coming from. I mean, literally. She came from Lima. I mean, I literally didn't pay attention to where she was coming from. The Bible tells us in Hebrews 13:2, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have entertained angels unawares. There are angels in our midst. Welcome them. So my first CFO experience gave me the space to explore a lot of things without pressure and without judgment, which is one of the things I love about CFO. Gave me the space to be a Christian teenager, which was a big deal. Didn't really know hardly any others. Gave me the space to explore the baptism of the Holy Spirit. It gave me a chance to explore kind of relating with clergy people outside their clergy role. This was a really weird one. We went through the whole week at camp, and then on the last day, you go to sharing, and there were like, at that time, there were like 6 or 8 of them, these people in black suits with these white collars. I just dunked him and creamed the carrier in the pool. Like, I was dunking a priest? I mean, I was like totally, remember, I was like 17. I was, oh my gosh. And in those days, you know, priests were way up here and I was way down here. So it was wonderful to be able to interact with them as human beings. connect with other people my age who had a passion for Jesus, interact with Christians from other traditions. You took a survey, Don, of where people came from. We're not going to do this, but we could take a survey of all the different traditions that are mentioned here, Presbyterians and Methodists and Catholics and Episcopalians and a little bit of everything. When I started coming to camp, those people didn't always play well together. And believe me, when Glenn Clark started this thing, they really didn't play well together. It was an incredible opportunity for me to meet folks. And it was a nice place to be without being judged because my parents were divorced. Now, again, nowadays, not a big deal. 1981, much bigger deal. So I'm here to proclaim to the kids in the back, nobody will force you, well, to do anything or believe anything or eat anything that you don't want to. I can't guarantee the eat anything you don't want to part, but I think it's a nice idea during camp. But you will find the space here to come to friendship with God and grow in friendship with God. That there are divine appointments that God has made for us this week, in this time and in this place. And I encourage you, whatever you have come here with, do not doubt your presence here and now. Enter in as much as you can, because you are not here by accident. And that is true whether this is your first camp or your 50th camp. You are not here by accident. So, got any questions about my CFO life here? You got all that? Any questions? Anything I didn't cover? I tried to give the big strokes, the big picture. I've been here. I've been kicking around for a while. You just don't know me. I'm a friend you haven't met yet. Anything else? Good. Okay, good. So I've entered a new phase of my life, and this is for my next slide. On July 3rd, I married off that little bitty guy with the telephone. That's him, Ben. Ben and his new wife, Molly. So now there's another Mrs. Morse. Ben and Molly Morse were married on July 3rd out in Southern California. And I love her, and I love them. And it was beautiful. By the way, there are no bad pictures of Ben and Molly. They're those kind of people. There are no bad pictures of Ben and Molly. They are gorgeous. They are gorgeous. So, but now he's living in Brookline, Massachusetts. And I'm still kind of getting over that fact that, like, his room is not home anymore. I'm still working on that. I'm delighted that he's married, but that he's not really coming home, I haven't got that yet. I'm working on it. And then I have Sam, who is 19, who's in and out of our house pursuing his dreams with the U.S. ski team. He's just been appointed for a second year, so he's living in Park City, Utah, and he dips in and out of our lives. So I needed a cure for the empty nest. So I thought I'd pursue a dream that I have been wanting to pursue for a long time, and so I have just finished my first year of doctoral studies, actually for a Doctor of Ministry degree. Now, don't get me confused with Boyd, okay? He has a PhD. He has spent many, many, many hours in libraries and books and things. I am getting a Doctor of Ministry degree, which is a practical degree. I didn't mean that as a slam. What I meant is, I don't have to make a huge contribution to the academic community. My degree, they call, and you'll love this, they call it a terminal degree, which I think is hysterical. It means it's like the highest degree you can get within, like, your field. It's hysterical. A terminal degree. Does not sound good. So I thought at one point I'd like to do a PhD, but there's no point now. But I could still put doctor on my business cards if I want. But I got to finish first. Got to finish. And so I looked long and hard to find a program that would really, just really engage my passion. So it took me about a year to find it. And so the focus of my studies is something called semiotics and future studies. That sound good? Semiotics and future studies. I thought they made the word up. It's an okay Scrabble word. Not great. It's okay. But it is a real word, and I'm going to show you in a minute that while I am learning how to be a semiotician, you are all semioticians. So, I will unpack that. Semiotics. Anybody want to take a gab? I mean, except for Boyd. Anybody else want to take it? I'll give it to him in a minute, but I thought we'd start with everybody else. Semi-something. Anybody else? Half of something. Good guess. Something to do with words. Yes. Yes.
Symbols.
Signs. What? Semi-something. Anybody? Easiest way to do it, which is kind of cheating. Anybody ever seen any Dan Brown movies or seen National Treasure, any of that guy? That main character they call a symbologist, and they call that character a symbologist because nobody would understand if they called them a semiotician. Okay, I'm not treasure hunting, but in terms of looking at signs, looking at symbols, trying to figure out what's going on. So basically, to be a semiotician is someone who looks at the sign, someone who pays attention. That's really about it. So my mentor for that course of study is a guy named Leonard Sweet, and he's a crazy, crazy guy. You probably never met him, Boyd. He's a different field. But he wrote this book called Nudge, Awakening Each Other to the God Who Is Already There. Awakening Each Other to the God Who Is Already There. Sounds like CFO to me. Hello. So I've been using a lot of his book for my talks. Wanted to give good credit to Len, my buddy Len. Everybody here is a semiotician. How many of you have ever bought a car? That's a few of you. Did you find that once you bought that car, you noticed that everybody else has that car? You're a semiotician. Or how about you? How many of you have had braces? And when you got those braces, did you start noticing all the other people that had braces? Hey, you're a semiotician. Or how about you just discovered this new song that you really like, and you just noticed they're playing that song everywhere? Semioticians are simply people who can read the signs. It's called the art of paying attention. The disciples were not very good at it, and Jesus chides them for this. They're not all that great at reading signs. And this is not about end times. Do not worry. I'm not talking about Revelation. We're not talking about those kinds of signs. Not going there. Don't worry about that. Not doing that. But I do believe that Jesus wants us to be good at perceiving the kingdom of God and perceiving the kingdom of God among us. So I thought it was really quite coincidental that CFO is pretty much in line with this. Can anybody... This is another quiz, because I love to just make sure y'all haven't totally fallen asleep, or at least there's enough awake to still talk to. Thank you. Purpose of CFO? This kind of new purpose statement that we've had in the last 5 years or so? Anybody know it? Becky's going to know it. You know it, Helen? You want to try it? Yeah? Nice. Great. Has anybody ever heard that or something like that? Well, let's read it together. You want to do the next one? Okay, here we go. Providing a Christ-centered, Holy Spirit-led program through which people discover the kingdom of God in the midst of today's world. That's what we're doing here. That's pretty good stuff. Okay, is anybody ever... How many of you have not heard that? Okay, good. I'll leave it up for a while then. Okay. Or as it says in the Anglican Book of Common Worship, as we watch for the signs of your kingdom on earth, we echo the songs of the angels in heaven. Seeing the signs of God's presence is a form of prayer. It's unity with the divine. And I think of how many people in life have been waiting their whole life for a message from God when in fact, it was there all along. And I think that that's one of the amazing things about CFO. We get to notice what really was there. This is not a secret. We're not Gnostics. It's here. But we're helping each other to see it. Glenn Clark, as you've already heard, the founder of CFO, Tanya's been giving us wonderful little tidbits and little quotes by him, which is great. He believed that, like radio waves, the very air around us is full of messages from God. But our radios don't receive and then play music or whatever it is unless they're turned on and tuned in to the right frequency. So we have to learn to be turned on and tuned in to God. And that takes practice and intentionality, or as Tanya says, choosing consciously. Rhea Zakich builds on this in her Adventures in the Laboratory prayer book. I did see some of those floating around, right? Visuals. Y'all seen this? Yeah, probably on the book table. Don't take mine. In order to be a good receiver of God's message, we should do three things. It's in Rhea's book. Glenn talks about these three things. Here they are. Tone down. Tone down is the first one, which is relax and focus on God. A lot of the CFO day is really about relaxing and coming into focus. Second one, turn on. Turn on your desire to connect with God. And then thirdly, tune in terms of giving God our full attention. You can see how parts of the CFO day are all connected with that. And that's the art of semiotics, the art of finding channels and making connections. So take a minute, think of the Bible stories that you know. What are some signs that God used in the Bible to get people's attention? Burning bush. Thank you. Moses and the burning bush. What else we got?
Angels,
for sure. Rainbow, Noah and the rainbow, which was assigned to him as much as to everybody else. Yeah, what else we got?
Donkeys.
You mean Balaam and his... one of my absolute favorite stories. What else we got? Doves. By the way, do you know that God hardly ever uses the same sign twice, which is not all that helpful? Star? Yeah, that's right. There's a good one. Star of Bethlehem.
Rainbow?
We did say rainbow. Mustard seed? Okay. God's using sign language all the time to communicate with us. And I'd love to hear some of your stories of how God communicates with you through sign. I'm going to share a little story that some of you unfortunately have heard before. So while this is a talk you haven't heard before, you know some of the seminal stories of your life, they just keep coming back again. So those of you who have heard this, just relax, fan yourself, play with your jingle bell. Okay. This is a story in which God has really communicated with me. It was a sign that has stayed with me and stayed with me and stayed with me. It was a few years ago, I don't know, 5, 8 years ago. And I was out for a walk, and I was in Rangeley, Maine. Rangeley is a beautiful lake, much smaller than Lake Winnipesaukee, but it's a pretty substantial lake. And I was out walking on the backside, and I was walking on a road that follows along the side of the lake, so right up close to the lake. And I was enjoying being out for a walk and noticing all kinds of things, because when you're driving, you don't notice. And when you're walking, you're plodding along, you just see all kinds of things, you know. You see the little duckies in the puddle, and, you know, you just see all kinds of things. And I was really enjoying just noticing and slowing down. And I come around a slight curve in the road, and there, standing, straddling the yellow line, is a bear, a black bear. Wish Peter was here. There really are animals in them there woods. Black bear standing right there, probably about 100 to 150 feet away. Not far, like from me to Charlie. Yeah, that's about it. It was not far. I don't know how far, it was about that far. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he reared up on his back two legs. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I held my breath, and he probably held his breath too, I don't know. And then he went back down on his four legs and moved so swiftly and silently off into the woods on the other side from the lake. He had obviously come down to the lake to drink and was going back up into the woods. It was only the second time in Maine I'd ever seen a bear. So unlike here, they are very, very elusive. Very elusive. And I was just struck in awe and wonder, and I was all by myself, and I just stopped there, and I just stood there, and I was just kind of tingling, you know, now the adrenaline rush was coming through, and I just stood there, and for a long time. And I was afraid that he might come back. And I was afraid that he might not come back. Because it was such an amazing moment. And then it was over so quickly. And in that moment, I really felt God communicated to me. And this is what I took. This is what I heard. For me, too often, prayer is a habit. Although praying by habit is sometimes the best I can do, and I'm not sure God judges that, because sometimes that's all you got. But it's seldom that I come to God with awe and wonder like I had in that moment. I mean, I was awestruck. And God really challenged me. How differently would my praying be? How different would my life and God be if I could capture and instill and enter into being in God's space with that kind of awe and wonder? Because you see, I was afraid that the bear would come back, but I was also afraid that the bear wouldn't come back. And I realized God was really bold with me. He said, Pam, sometimes you think I'm going to show up, and sometimes you're afraid I will show up. And sometimes you're afraid I won't show up, but sometimes you're afraid I will show up, because if I show up, everything changes. I always take that. Are you ever afraid that God actually will show up? And if he does show up, that'll change everything. Imagine if God really did show up, and whatever it is that you're struggling with right now, in all of that awe and wonder and power, that would change everything. And I'm not sure we're always ready for that. We would just like enough God to handle. Not sure God always comes that way. Do you ever get bored with life? You don't have to answer that out loud. But do you ever get bored? Or do your kids ever come to you and say, I'm bored? My mentor, Len Sweet, has a wonderful thing about boredom. He says, when we get bored, it's because we're not paying attention. We're not paying attention to life. He says, his children come to him and say, Dad, I'm bored. And he says to them, no, you're not bored. You're having a semiotic breakdown. And then the kids go and complain to his wife, and his wife says, don't worry, your father's just in one of his semiotic spells. He'll get over it. But it's true. If you are bored with life, you're not paying attention. And CFO could be your wake-up call. Wake up, oh sleeper. Wake up, wake up. I love CFO because it wakes me up. Wakes up my semiotic senses. Invites me to connect with the divine at a deeper level. And I think the church at large, by the way, I think the church at large is having a semiotic breakdown. There are Christians all over who are just bored. And that is not okay. Why are they bored? Gosh, they need help. They need CFO. Because in other venues of Christian life, and tell me if you don't agree with this, because I'd be fascinated, but my experience is, in other venues of Christian life, we are taught to think, but we are not always taught how to pay attention. See the difference? I went to a fine liberal arts institution. I went to Bates College. I loved being at Bates. I love that they taught me how to think. But honestly, CFO is where we can really learn how to pay attention. Another little story. My sister Leanne and I, we're 4 years apart. She's the middle child. I'm the oldest child. Where's Carol? I'm the risk-averse child, the oldest child. Yes. How many oldest children do we have in here? Good Lord. Holy cow. And how many middles? How many middles? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. Now, every family, let's face it. Every family that has children has a firstborn. So, statistically, there are going to be more of you. But still, very few secondborns. Anyway, so we're going to kindergarten. My sister Leanne is going to kindergarten. Okay, so that means I'm going into third grade. All right? I'm the big older sister. She's the little kindergartner. We live, honestly, you could see the elementary school from my house where I grew up. Okay, I grew up on the same road as the elementary school, and you could see it. It was from here to maybe the inn. But you could see it was on the same road. And so on the very first day of school, I take my sister by the hand, and we go down the stairs of our house, and we look across the road, and it's suburbia. This is Braintree, Mass. This is not the city, okay? This is hometown USA. Think the Cleavers before they realized that they didn't exist. Okay, so here we are. I'm holding their hand. We got our lunch boxes. Got the little cute little dresses. We're ready to go. And I am the firstborn. So I'm looking up the street. And I'm looking down the street. There are no crossing guards in front of my house. And I'm looking up the street. And just to make sure, I'm looking down the street. And then I realize I have my sister. I'm in charge. So I'm looking up the street. And by now, my sister has wrenched her hand out of my hand, and she's just run across the street. We both remember that. Which one of us was paying attention? Well, we were both paying attention, but in different ways. I was the risk-averse paying attention. I was looking for danger. My sister was looking for opportunity. Who do you want to be? Firstborns. Who do you want to be? I invite you this week to look for opportunity. Don't just look for danger. A couple of quotes I love. Mary Oliver, poet, says, "This is the first, wildest, and wisest thing I know, that the soul exists and that it is built entirely out of attentiveness." Or Annie Dillard, if you prefer, "Pay attention so that creation need not play to an empty house." Isn't that great? So for me, and for a lot of us, prayer is the art of paying attention. Prayer is where Christians most often practice paying attention. Oh, and speaking of which, I think I have another screen. That one's pretty boring. Oh, there you go. Here's one you can pay attention with. Prayer, as I said in my prayer group today, I didn't come up with this, by the way, but I think it really speaks to me. Prayer is not about getting God to pay attention to us. It's about us learning to pay attention to God. And so many of my prayers are about getting God to pay attention. Woohoo! I'm down here. We're drowning. The boat's filling up. And those are not bad prayers, but let's face it, prayer is the art of giving God our attention. We get to practice that at CFO. And paying attention is a form of surrender. In case you missed that, I'm going to say it one more time. Paying attention is a form of surrender. It's not a word we like. Most of us live in the delusion that we are in control. Tanya, you will appreciate this. I have this pinned over my desk. A mind preoccupied with planning pays homage to the idol of control. A mind preoccupied with planning pays homage to the idol, I-D-O-L, of control. Surrender. I'll be talking about surrender this week. Anybody familiar with E. Stanley Jones? Okay, all right. Anybody like E. Stanley Jones? All right, and I'll give you my E. Stanley Jones quote. Okay. He has a little tome here called Victory Through Surrender. You still like it? Victory Through Surrender. Here it comes. Page 28. Thank you. Thank you. Got it. Thank you. I'll read this, and I'll finish. You're talking about Christians and the need to what Christianity is. Its path is self-surrender. Note, I do not say self-commitment. You may be committed to a person or a project and not surrendered to that person or project. You may be committed to another in marriage by marriage vows, but not inwardly surrendered to that other person. A soldier may be committed to military service because he has to be by government orders, but he may not be inwardly surrendered to it. He is there under protest. Self-surrender is the strongest and most comprehensive word I know, and it needs such a strong word to meet what is involved. For what is involved is this. We are to hand back to God the self that is handed to us by the Creator, to surrender the one and only thing we own. That's going to take the rest of my lifetime. Finish with a short story, the difference between commitment and surrender. So some of you know I live at a ski resort. Somebody's got to do it. One day when Sam was 8 or 9, somewhere in there, it was a snow day, so the kids were home from school. So what do kids who live at a ski mountain do on a snow day? They go out skiing. So said goodbye to Sam in the morning. I have an office right at the mountain. Ski in, ski out. I know, someone's got to do it. So Sam goes off skiing for the day. I'm working at my desk. Don't think anything about it. Lifts close at 3:50. Mountain's really done by 4 o'clock. Round about 3:50, I realize I haven't seen Sam all day. Never saw him at lunchtime, but you know, he might have gone home with somebody else for lunch. But it's December, and on a north-facing mountain, it's dark by 4 o'clock. And I have no idea where Sam is. I have no idea where Sam is. I went to panic really fast, because the lifts have now stopped, and Sam is not at my office. I'm feeling a lot of things at once. Being a bad parent was certainly high up there, and not paying attention to my child was definitely high up there. And I remember calling Ski Patrol and saying, you know, I've lost my child. I don't know where my child is. And luckily, they know me. They know Sam. But the time is clicking, and the time is clicking, and it's now dark, and it's 4:15, and I'm in my office, and I'm in the rocking chair, and I'm rocking, and I'm rocking, and my kid's like 8 years old, and I'm rocking, and I'm rocking, and I am committed to God, but I am not surrendered. I am not surrendered. I am bartering with God. I am making deals. I am auctioning my second child. I mean, I'm doing everything. I am... Lord, 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 Lord. No, no, I am not accepting this. And I know too much. I've been here too long. Kids get really, I am not surrendered. And about 4:30, Ski Patrol calls and said, yeah, we found him. He and his friend Thomas were making a jump up on wherever. They have no idea the lifts have stopped. They have no idea that they are missing. He was fine. He was not anxious at all. But it's always spoke to me that there's a real big difference between being committed to God and being surrendered, because I was not surrendered. Guess what this is? It's my 9 o'clock prayer. All right, let's stand up and do it. How's that for a transition? While you're doing that, I will say that your jingle bells, and I'll speak about that more tomorrow, are to practice the art of paying attention, so bring those in the morning. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Amen.
There was a milk shell.